In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xennial. But what is a Xennial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xennial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
How y'all doing today? I believe this is our third podcast now.
I think it is.
Yes.
I think it is. We're actually being consistent at something, or at least I am.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what's happened to me.
I know. It's a little bit weird. Keeping things going. And we were just discussing, we're almost on time today getting things
done. I know.
Done.
And then a camera went out and, you know, whatever. Stuff happens, right?
It happens. So today we're going to be talking about something that I believe is one of America's biggest pastimes.
Okay. What was that?
Well, it's not baseball.
Okay.
It's not football.
Okay, good. Because I'm like terrible at following either one of those.
Although it is something that people do while watching baseball
okay.
and football.
Okay.
Drinking. Imbibing of alcoholic beverages.
Of course. Okay.
This is something we do all the time, but thought of it. Baseball, football, okay. bars.
This sounds like it's going to get dark.
Yes and no. I mean, there's some seriousness to this, but this specifically has to do with some changes in the perception of drinking
okay.
that happened during our lifetimes, spawned by something that happened specifically
okay.
during my lifetime, not necessarily yours.
Okay.
A little bit before you were born.
All right.
But I'll get into that.
All right.
But alcohol is kind of a very important thing for the United States.
Right.
It's a big deal here.
Well, we did write a law abolishing the use of it.
Way back, yes.
Yeah, way back.
Way back. And then, of course, it created the gangster culture.
Oh, yeah.
As a huge thing.
Oh, yeah.
Many movies spawned since then.
Yeah.
Folk heroes and both good and bad.
True. Dude, I actually learned something. I saw something recently on actually Prohibition. It was really interesting.
Go ahead.
So I can't remember the name of the guy, but the guy that started Prohibition, mm-hmm. Apparently what had happened was he developed a hatred for the usage of alcohol. Because, okay. and this is back in like the 1890s or something like that.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. It was in the 1910s. The 1910s.
1890s.
Because he was a kid at the time, right? So the guy who lobbied against alcohol
yeah.
usage and consumption in the United States and actually helped lobby to create the 21st Amendment.
Yeah.
He seeded a hatred for alcohol because he was stabbed in the leg by a pitchfork. He was stabbed in the leg. Excuse me.
Right.
He was stabbed in the leg by a pitchfork.
Mm-hmm.
By one of his ranch hands or something like
okay.
that when he was a kid. So he thought alcohol was terrible or something like that and decided to lobby against it because he thought it was a dangerous substance. Well, this guy, dude.
Well, what does pitchforks have to do with alcohol?
When your ranch hand is drunk
okay,
and
that,
stabs
that
you in the leg with a pitchfork.
You didn't mention the ranch hand being drunk first.
Yeah, the ranch hand was drunk. I'm sorry. So yeah.
Okay.
It's okay. I've only got like a small part of the story here. But
okay.
basically, like, apparently that's what did it for him. And he became this, we're talking, this guy became like Barry Goldwater good
lobbying
for politics.
This is actually quite amusing because what I brought to the table to talk about today
yeah.
has kind of a similar, I would say the thing I'm bringing is much more of a big thing happened for the changes that happened, much bigger. I don't want to equate being stabbed in the leg with a pitchfork by, you know, to what I'm bringing.
Right.
far as the changes that happened because of this incident, but
right.
a similar incident, something happened and somebody made a change in how alcohol was perceived and what was happening with alcohol.
That's essentially what it was. But this guy was the cool thing of not exactly cool thing, but the really interesting thing about this is that this guy was one of the seediest dudes in politics like ever. And he was super, super convincing. But one of the things he ended up doing, like he did all this crazy stuff and, you know, he had the 21st Amendment written, you know, put together and had Congress vote on it and actually had it passed and like all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But a lot of the shady crap that he did afterwards was nuts. So this guy, first off, when they started bootlegging because of the counterculture that happened from alcohol becoming illegal.
Yeah.
Right. And the mob and like all that kind of stuff. This guy hired the KKK to raid bootleggers.
Well, but you need to understand that at that point in time, the KKK would have been an organization that had political and religious ties.
This was almost
an acceptable gentleman's club at the time. It was not the organization how we view it today as a hate group. This was a
pride group. A hate group at the time.
But that's not how they were perceived. They were perceived as a pride group and true, as a community. True,
it
doesn't matter. Group.
But that is regardless. Because, but well, the KKK's it's like entirely, involvement in politics is very, very. There's a long history. I'm not getting to that point.
I'm just saying it's not necessarily irregardless at that time. At that time, those would have been that group would have been a respectable group of people, right, as far as their perception in society was. They were perceived as somebody that was trying to protect the culture of white people back then. But they for them to be doing things that were involved with a political lobbyist. Or even politicians at that time.
Oh yeah,
would have actually been acceptable.
There's a lot. They're kind of a lot of the time. Like people can argue nowadays that they're still pretty involved in many circles that you don't hear about. But that's beside the point.
Okay.
The most interesting thing that I actually thought about this guy was the fact that he was the one that actually poisoned cleaning alcohol, because what would end up happening after this was
so he is one of them that started the poisoning of the alcohol and yep. getting people
he
sick
was the one who created what is it called Formula 30. He's the one who helped create Formula 30,
okay.
poisoning cleaning alcohol because a bunch of workers were using cleaning alcohol to get drunk as an alternative because selling alcohol was technically illegal and it was a cheap way of doing it. So this guy's responsible for a bunch of crazy shit.
I'm going to say make sure to when you post this up,
yeah.
link information to this documentary that you watch or this, whatever this program that you watch was, if you can.
Documentary I watched was a drunk history YouTube video.
Do it anyway. Cause that actually makes a lot of sense to make it a drunk history thing.
It's a really cool story, but it was kind of fun just to watch, but these people don't really put this stuff out there. Most of the drunk history stuff that I've actually watched is not essentially untrue. It's just like a really
it's
saying it, but it's still true.
No, it says all the actual points. It's just satirizing and humorizing it as much as possible. But you still get the important historical
absolutely
things that happen within it. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned drunk history, because it didn't even dawn on me to mention it with what I was bringing to talk about. The drunk history is actually showing a. What's the word I want to use? It's a change in this perception thing that I brought here to talk about. This perception that changed when we were kids.
Yeah.
It's changed again. And drunk history is an example of how it's changed again.
Yes.
So, but good point in that the United States has had a tumultuous relationship with alcohol. More so than many of the other countries. I mean, alcohol is important for many countries in the world. And many countries have it as a big part of their culture. They have specific alcohols that are indicative of their countries and culture.
Mm-hmm.
They have kids drinking at young ages.
Mm-hmm.
But America, we've had some difficulties with this. We've had prohibition,
mm-hmm.
and then we have what happened in 1980.
Okay.
Specifically, let me look at my note here. September 5th, 1980.
Okay, what happened?
A 13-year-old girl was killed by a drunk driver.
Well, that happens a lot.
This happened specifically...
It does happen a lot. I'm just stating a fact.
No, interestingly enough, this happened at the T corner, because it's a T corner, of Sunset Avenue and New York Avenue. In Fair Oaks, California.
Really?
Right here in Northern California, in Fair Oaks, California, corner of Sunset and New York Avenue. This 13-year-old girl was hit.
Okay.
Her mother, Candace Leitner, decided that after this 13-year-old was, her daughter was hit and killed by this drunk driver.
Okay.
That she was going to start a group, an organization, to try to stop drunk driving. And thus was born MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
MAD was born in Sacramento?
Yes, it was. Did I blow your mind?
Yes, you just blew my mind.
I told you beforehand I
would. I did not know that.
In 1980, right here in Sacramento area.
Holy smokes.
In Fair Oaks. Didn't you live in Fair Oaks at some point?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, not too far from that, if I remember correctly.
No, not too far from it at all.
Yeah, just so many blocks away.
Yeah, that's
I'm sure that's crazy. I'm sure you even drove through that intersection at one point or another multiple times.
I'm sure that I did.
And yet, that is the birth of MAD. Now, anybody that's a Zennial, possibly some Gen Xers, and even some of the millennials listening will know what MAD is. Mothers Against Drunk Driving. They did a lot of campaigns at schools. They put on different demonstrations at schools to try to curb and or eradicate completely drunk driving.
Well, this was, okay, now that I think about it, so are you telling me that, I mean, MAD has been... So MAD's localized essentially at this point around 1980 to California, right?
That's when it
did
started.
Did it become a national campaign?
It became a national campaign. It's currently based in Irving, Texas. And it's not just national. It is
moved to Texas, huh?
It's in the U.S. and Canada. There is an office in every single state of the U.S. and in every territory in Canada. There's at least one office of MAD.
Dude.
It became a nationwide thing.
Wow.
Huge. And all from the start of this one 13-year-old girl being killed by a drunk driver here in Northern California.
That's insane. I did not know that.
That was probably one of the most surprising things to me is how local this is to us. And again, how this happens. Now, this 13-year-old girl obviously would have been a Gen Xer by her, you know, age
and generation. Well, yeah, she was 13 in 1980, yeah.
But this, in 1980 is when the change started coming from this organization being built. And now, first thing I want to say is, I don't want to say that this is a terrible organization in any way, shape, or form. There have been things that it has done with some of its demonstrations that may have gone a little overboard on a few things.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I think we can agree, drunk driving is a risky thing that can injure and kill people. And it's a risk that shouldn't be taken.
Yeah, of course not. Absolutely not.
It's definitely not something that we condone
right.
in any way, shape, or form. But it's interesting to note how the formation of this organization and its involvement in trying to stop drunk driving
mm-hmm.
changed the perception of drinking in this country. Made the view of it a completely different thing.
Really, as far as just not dealing with, I mean, I can understand the basic concept of don't drive drunk. That's a stupid thing to do.
Well, how about the fact that before 1984, states individually set drinking ages. And in 1984, there was a federal law enacted.
Now, I remember hearing about that. I remember, sorry, I'm cutting you off. I remember hearing about that. Like my parents, the legal drinking age when my parents when my parents had me, I thought was like 18.
Well, in 1984, there was a federal law, the National Minimum Drinking Age Act, that was put into place. Now, here's the thing about it, though. This was put into place to make it so that the federal drinking age was 21.
Right.
But it didn't force all the states to necessarily do that.
Okay.
What it did is if the states didn't do that,
right.
they had to pay fines. They did not. I know it seems funny, but some states didn't want to change the age.
You have to excuse me. We're not going to have cameras on this episode, but my face just did something weird, wishing that I had a working camera.
Yeah, it was kind of a squinting surprise. What the hell kind of reaction? the thing about it is we get to
vocalize the reactions that we have from each other.
The thing about it is this: the reason that they were willing to pay some of the fines for it mm-hmm. and deal with the fine program for it is because they still wanted to sell alcohol to 18-year-olds.
Okay.
18, I believe, was the youngest age that they had as a legal age for drinking
okay.
around the U.S., but they didn't want to lose those sales. Those sales made more money than what it was worth to pay the levies for it.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Until there was a court case in 86 that I believe it took place in South Dakota
really?
That basically upheld the federal law. And so by 1988, every state in the United States had set their drinking age at 21 to comply with the law.
So it was you said it was South Carolina? Is that what you said?
South Dakota.
South Dakota, sorry.
Which makes sense. What else do you want to do in South Dakota except drink?
Okay, so their minimum drinking age was 21?
It was 18, but it got changed to 21 because of a lawsuit.
So the federal minimum was 21.
The federal minimum was 21, and again, you paid levies if you did not set your state minimum to 21. Oh. And then finally,
they're just like, no, this isn't working. So we're making it 21.
In 1988, they made it 21 everywhere.
Wow. In 88?
88.
Now, that's crazy.
You think your entire life was 21.
I thought that it was like way earlier than that. No. Of course, I mean, it was like six, so
Any reason for it.
Yeah.
But the reason behind the change in the laws, MAD. MAD was what was campaigning.
So they were the ones that were campaigning towards raising the legal drinking age.
Yep.
Okay. Okay.
They figure raising the age, I'm sure some of the thought involved was you had the drivers that were from 18 to 21 that really were still young drivers, irresponsible drivers, thinking you raise the age, you raise the level of responsibility. Although I can tell you from the times that I have been out drinking, 21-year-olds drunk are no more responsible than an 18-year-old drunk. But still, that was, I'm sure, some of the recourse behind it. It may have something to do with the age of the driver that actually hit her daughter, but I don't know for sure if that has any significance to it or not. But still, this campaign changed a law. This changed policy throughout the entire United States on what drinking age is. But more importantly, it changed the perception of how alcohol was viewed.
Okay.
And this is a perception that had been slowly changing, but became even more so once MAD became involved.
So you're telling me that they kind of changed the perception of what alcohol was as far as just what people think about it, like smoking, like when people were doing.
We're going to do a half hour on another day regarding smoking and how that campaign changed.
Was changed.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still doing the research on that one to get information like I have here for this.
Okay, because it sounds kind of like a similar. The drinking stuff and the drug commercials and stuff that were coming out when we were kids.
Yeah,
there's like the truth campaign for smoking and all that kind of stuff. But I remember so much more about the anti-drunk driving stuff. There were whole demonstrations that were put on at my school, and I know a lot of people dealt with that. They had this whole thing, if I can go into this, they had at my high school a whole setup where it was a staged drunk driving accident on the street in front of my school.
Yep.
And what they would do, actually, they would interrupt. There was this whole like super theatrical, crazy, cheesy crap that they used to do.
They'd interrupt the class. They'd give certain people.
And they would read a eulogy. Yeah. Ours was like, I don't know how, if you had that at your school, but I remember they had it at mine.
And it was in high school, right?
It was in high school.
Luckily, by the time I was in high school, I was in such a small high school that it wasn't worth the effort of them to come up to where my high school was, because it was up in the middle of the woods. There was only like 50 people in the high school, so it wasn't really worth the effort of MAD to come up there.
I think this was something that was done by the school. Okay. I mean, they worked with the local police and did all that kind of stuff too. Yeah, but they had, dude, it was like crazy, crazy deep. So I remember in my classroom, I would be sitting in the classroom, and what would happen was there's two students, and then somebody dressed up as the Grim Reaper would walk into the classroom.
Yes.
Right? They would walk up, the Grim Reaper would point at one of the students.
Yep.
The two other students would read a eulogy for that student. That student would look around the classroom, say nothing, stand up, and walk out of the classroom.
Yep.
And it just seemed like such a high school play.
Well, and even if your high school may have been the one putting it on, this was inspired by what MAD was doing. MAD was completely behind it.
Okay, maybe this was part of MAD, because next thing that happened, they took that idea, and they staged a drunk driving accident where a wrecked car and students laying on the ground with, you know, blood and broken glass and all this stuff. This was like directly in front of us. Like all of the classes were just basically,
and this was, they this were was just part of the, this is where
heard I, it out to this display that they had, and into the police, and they've got the flashing lights, and they're doing the whole thing and covering the bodies in the tarp and like all this kind of stuff. And they did that whole display. And I remembered hearing afterwards that they actually took the students that were part of that display. They took them in gurneys to the morgue, and their bodies quote unquote, were identified by their parents in the morgue.
Now that I don't know about the length of that, but
still. They did that. They added another step that I had never heard of anybody do.
Wow.
Yeah, that was like deep. It was pretty nuts.
This is where I say when I mentioned earlier that they may have overstepped a little in different points. That's the overstep.
That's just like, dude, that put their parents and the students through a completely different type of trauma. Don't worry, they were totally open and had a full open discussion with, hey, we're doing this. This is how we're going to do it. This is the whole thing. We want to make sure. But this part of it is about knowing the experience of what that is and what you're supposed to be.
So did any of that stop you from drinking?
From drinking?
Did any of it stop you from drinking and driving?
No. Like, I was lucky enough to not really have to put myself in the drunk driving situation.
Yes. I was gonna mention the fact that for a number of years there, you lived in a location where you didn't have to drink and drive. You had to drink and stumble.
stumble across the street.
100 feet, basically, to get to your door.
Yeah. In my 20s, I would go to the bar across the street and
stumble home with a bucket in hand.
With a bucket in hand? No, they just supplied the bucket and they kept it there at the bar.
Oh, they kept the bucket there.
Yeah, they kept the bucket there.
Did you have one with
your name? Don't worry, they had plenty of buckets. They were a bar.
Did you have one with your name on it?
No.
It wouldn't have surprised me, actually, if you had. And then, of course, the few times I heard about you having pants around the ankles on the way home, but that's a whole different story.
Well, that was just, look.
Hey, at least you followed Mad's commands and you weren't drunk driving. You were just drunk stumbling. That's a lot safer. But those kind of campaigns, those scare the kids campaigns, it still had an influence on culture.
Right.
Culture was the culture of the United States was turning away from recreational drinking. Think about film reel you see from newsreel you see from in the 70s. People sitting around drinking beers, all happy. And in the 80s, drinking doesn't become a just hang out and do thing. It suddenly becomes, oh, this person is an alcoholic, in films and TV. This person's an alcoholic, so there's a problem. This person has a couple of drinks tonight. They're an alcoholic. It's a problem. It's an issue. Whereas before, a couple of drinks tonight was just what people did. What I use as an example to show the cultural shift in alcohol and its perceived evil, if you will, I use two movies as examples of how at one point alcohol consumption was just an acceptable part of life. And then it suddenly became something that only people do in either as alcoholics or in extreme circumstances. And funny enough, both of these movies are Disney movies.
Interesting. I mean, I am not completely positive that are you talking about like any mention of alcohol consumption in either one of these films?
No, actually, this is a big deal. This is a major issue in both of these films. Alcohol is a major issue, and I will explain it. It's a major issue.
Okay.
And the way that they are handled and perceived shows the cultural shift in alcohol consumption and in the acceptability of alcohol consumption.
Okay.
The movies I'm referencing are the Parent Trap movies. Let's talk about the original. Hold on.
Whoa, I like where that's going. Okay. And I have seen neither one of these.
Okay, that's okay.
Okay. Now, that being said, I have seen neither one of these movies. But I think that this is the appropriate time to take a break on this and come back to it.
Fantastic. We can do that now.
This sounds like it gets deep and I think it'd be fantastic.
There is some depth to it. So we'll take a break and we'll come back and discuss how the Parent Trap movies show society's shift in at least American society's shift in the acceptance of alcohol usage.
Fantastic.
All right. See you soon.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back.
Hey.
Hope everybody is still here. They didn't, walk away or turn it off or decide that they don't want to listen to us anymore.
Yeah. Who doesn't want to hear about the Parent Trap?
Hey, I remember watching the Haley Mills one many, many times when I was a kid.
Okay. I've actually seen neither one of them, but I am really intrigued by this. I had no idea that was the case.
Oh, yeah. Well, again,
Or at least that's a good documentary for what we're talking about, right?
It is because you literally have two different versions of basically the exact same story.
Yeah.
One made in 1961. The original Parent Trap was made in 1961 with Haley Mills in the twin role. And
wow, I didn't know it was that far back. I thought it was way later. I thought it was the 70s.
61.
Wow.
61.
Okay.
And then the more recent one made in 98 with Lindsay Lohan in the dual roles.
Yes.
That one I think benefits from having Dennis Quaid in it as the dad, which is helpful. I forget the name of the actor that was the dad in the original one. And honestly, the majority of people listening to this probably wouldn't even know who the guy is. So I believe Maureen O'Hara was the mom, though. Maureen O'Hara would be known for anybody that loves John Wayne. She was in The Quiet Man and McClintock.
She was in the original Parent Trap you're talking about.
Yeah, I believe she was the mom in the original Parent Trap. I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain.
Isn't it? Who's the mom in the new one? It's not Jamie Lee Curtis. Am I mixing that up with another film?
You're mixing that up with the other Lindsay Lohan film, the Freaky Friday.
Oh, the other Disney remake they did.
Yes, the other Disney remake. No, it was, I believe it was Natasha Richardson.
Okay.
I believe. And I think she's the one that was, I think she was the one that was married to Liam Neeson that sadly passed away in a skiing accident.
Oh, that's terrible.
Years ago. But I think Natasha Richardson, because her sister's Miranda, and she's the one that was in like Merlin and a bunch of other made for TV movies. But anyway, sorry, movie knowledge eking out a little bit.
Cool. Not a problem.
But
we'll have to do an episode on that.
Oh, well, we're going to have multiple things talking about movies with my knowledge of movies. They'll spill out at some point. But that actually is important for what we're talking about here with the Parent Trap movies. Because I'm fairly familiar with both movies. And in the original Parent Trap, for those of you who haven't seen the Parent Trap, basically it's parents that have a set of twins. They decide that they don't want to be parents together and be together anymore, so they separate the twins at a very young age. One parent, you know, the dad takes one twin, the mom takes the other twin. And they just so happen to meet up at a summer camp when they're like 9, 10, somewhere around there. And notice, hey, we look alike because we're identical and played by the same actress. And so...
Doesn't one of them have an English accent too or something like that?
Well, in the modern one, yes. One of them does have an English accent.
They did that... That's dumb.
Well, that's because the mom is British and lives in England.
Oh, okay.
Sent her to America to go to summer camp. And in the other one, it was more of a continental accent because one lived on the East Coast and one lived on the West Coast. I don't believe they went all the way over to...
all right. I got to hear that just to...
I may be wrong. It may be a full British accent. They may live in England, but I think it was just an East Coast, West Coast thing. But I've seen the movie many times, but it's been a little while, so...
Okay.
So forgive me if I'm off.
What's going on here, man?
Here's the deal. Most of it takes place at the dad's house in California in both instances.
Okay.
So in the original 1961 version, the dad is trying to get married to a kind of young, almost gold diggery type woman.
Okay.
And so the twins, having met each other and figured out that, oh, we're twins. At the summer camp, they figure it out that they are from pictures and stuff that they have.
Okay.
It's like the twin that lives with the mom shows a picture. This is my mom. And the other one's like, wait, I've seen a picture like that before. That looks like the picture of my mom that I've seen. Holy crap, we're twins. And they cut their hair to look the same, make it so that they look, you know, exactly like each other. And then they switch places.
Total side point here.
Yes.
Just out of curiosity, who the hell would be so cruel as to separate a pair of twins and not tell them about the other side of the family.
Well, the point.
What did they tell those twins? Did they tell them that mom was dead or something?
Basically.
Or like the one twin that mom's dead, the other one's dad's dead. Like what? They don't know anything about each other?
Basically. And keep in mind, this of course is pre-internet and still have phones where, you know, there's like only five digits to the phone number. So in 61, they probably had the full number of digits on number, but still this is the original one took place in a time where you really couldn't research that. There was no way to find out where your mom or dad was.
Still doesn't change the fact that it's straight up psychological abuse.
It is, but but it's you know, for humor and to share some kind of weird love story of parents getting back together that probably shouldn't ever. But anyway.
Right. We've made the agreement to go ahead and deceive our children.
Yeah, basically, well, because
sounds like we're perfect for each other and them.
What is it? What does it matter about deceiving children back then? Children were just kind of a grade above pets back then. But anyway,
I guess yeah, they were still technically owned.
Yeah, but anyway, so the twins decide to switch place.
Okay, yeah.
So the mom, the twin that lived with the mom, goes to try to meet the dad.
Okay,
the twin, and eventually they're gonna figure out a way to swap back.
Hijinks ensue.
Oh yes, very much so. Yeah. Especially when. The twin gets there from the mom, goes to the dad's place, and sees that the dad's trying to get remarried to this gold digger woman. She doesn't really want that to happen because, of course, they want their parents to get back together so right. that they could live together and be twins together and do all kinds of musical numbers and crap. Yes, there's musical numbers.
Okay. In both of them?
In the first one, for sure. I don't remember in the second one. I don't think there's one in the second one.
Doesn't seem like... I mean, that just seemed like the post-musical number type yeah. story.
Yeah.
You know, but either way, it just... The concept of that is horrible.
And one person at each location, one person at the dad's house, one person at the mom's house.
Okay.
Servants at both figure out what's really going on.
Okay.
And help the various twins.
Okay.
But basically, there comes a point where the truth gets out.
Right.
The mom comes over to the dad's place with the other twin.
Okay.
More hijinks ensue. And, of course, the parents end up getting back together. And it's important, actually, in both of them, especially in the second one when it comes to the alcohol portion of it. It's important. Yeah.
By the way, this episode's about alcohol.
It is about alcohol, yes. As much as we're talking about these movies, it's about alcohol. I'm just trying to set the stage for the movies.
Right.
So this is kind of, fun, supposed to be fun. Even though there's the psychological element that's freaking you out,
but it is.
These are supposed to be fun, it lighthearted. Seems like
drinking
comedies.
Is a lot lower on the list of problems that these people have.
Well, and that's the interesting point about it, because there's nothing about the premise, the basic premise, and both films basically follow the same premise with different beats based on one being in 61, one being in 98,
right?
And some of the geographical differences and the fact that whatever. It's the same basic premise through both movies.
Okay,
and yet. The alcohol is just a background thing in the first one, and yet it's actually an issue in the second one.
Really?
It's a background thing, but it's an issue. So, in the first one, when you're at the dad's place,
okay.
and he's got a ranch out in California. It's right. got a pool. It's got, horses and stuff everywhere. It's also got a drink station, a bar.
Okay.
Everywhere.
This is the one in the 60s, right?
This is the one in the 60s.
Oh, he has a bar everywhere he goes,
basically? He's got a little, and I'm not talking about like a bar that like it's a fully formed bar. I'm talking like the little tray table thing that's got wheels that
he's they would use He's got a mobile bar with him
with
all the time?
I'm saying with wheels to try to get it into your mind, but it may be stationary.
Okay.
But it's one of those tray things that has all the crystal decanters on it.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about? You've seen these type of things. So
this is what dad does. He just drinks.
Not only does he have the, because he's fairly well off. Both parents are fairly well off in both setups.
Well, how else can they afford to lie to their children on this level? Exactly.
And send them to summer camp. He's in that level of well off where his alcohol is in freaking decanters. He doesn't have the bottles sitting around. He has multiple decanters of alcohol. Sitting on his bars, and he has one outside and one inside. So there's one in his living room. There's one outside by his pool, or it's the same one and it gets moved. Thus the wheels.
Either way, he either has an assistant or this is my porch bourbon.
Yes. And and the thing is, he's drinking throughout the entire movie.
So the entire time he's Dean Martin.
I wouldn't go to the point of him being drunk the entire time, but he's drinking. And he's not drinking beer. He's not drinking wine. He is pouring 2 to 3 fingers of scotch and drinking it. There's a priest that comes over to discuss the wedding with him and his gold digger bride, or soon to be gold digger bride.
Right.
And he is drinking scotch.
The priest
is drinking scotch. Let's also add that every adult in the cast is smoking, because we'll use this as a smoking reference later as well.
The priest can drink. He is a priest, but still, I get where you're coming from.
Every adult is imbibing some type of alcoholic beverage at this house.
Right.
Every one of them. And it's not like it's just a normal random thing. It's never discussed. It's never an issue. They just have a drink in their hand and they're drinking. It's not even... talked about.
It's like a cultural thing. It's like
it's just natural.
It's adults. They're drinking. That's what they do because they're adults.
And it's never touched on. And again, Disney made movie. this was acceptable for adults just to have
especially at that freaking time.
Decanter, pour out some alcohol and drink something. There was there was just nothing abnormal about it.
Just out of curiosity here, isn't this around the same time that Song of the South came out?
We're not going to go there.
My only point is the fact that they might have had a slightly skewed perception of what should have been decent and okay.
I just want to notate that I've actually seen Song of the South in a theater. Even in the early 80s.
Wait, they were still airing in theaters in the 80s? It was
still being shown in theaters in the 80s, sir.
That's nuts. I didn't know that.
Look how far we've come. Even from our childhood, it was still being shown, and I remember seeing it. The only time I've ever seen it in my entire life was in a theater in the 80s, mid-80s.
That's nuts.
And I was old enough that I remember it.
But you know what I mean? Like, come on.
That's scary to think that it was still acceptable to watch that movie in a theater, to have it playing in a theater when we were kids, man. That's how far, at least that part's going. We still aren't where we should be.
Oh, hell no.
But at least we're not there anymore.
Yeah.
But anyway,
well, I mean, depending on the region of the country you go to.
Yeah, there may be some areas in the South where they might still consider showing something like that. But anyway.
But continue, please.
So
we're talking about alcohol.
Yes, we are. Not racism. But although, interestingly enough, not a single person of color in the original movie.
Oh, and, of course not.
And actually, I don't think in the second one either. But anyway, point being, the alcohol usage in the original in 1961 was just, again, it wasn't touched on, it wasn't talked about, it wasn't an issue in any way, shape, or form. It was just accepted that this is what adults do.
Okay.
Especially upper middle class adults. They're just going to drink. They're going to have their multiple decanters of alcohol, and they're going to take and have a drink at any random point of the day. It's not like you had a drink at night before you went to bed. It was literally sunshine out, one of the twins is swimming in the pool, and dad pours himself a drink.
Right, that's simple, that easy. Okay.
So, we fast forward to the 1998 Lindsay Lohan version.
All right.
Here's where it gets very interesting.
Okay.
The dad's not just a rancher in this one.
Okay.
He owns a winery.
Okay.
And you never see him drink wine the entire time he owns a winery.
So, he's like a Coke dealer.
The only time
or a heroin dealer.
The only time anybody drinks in the entire movie,
right?
You see the gold digger fiance bride,
right?
Have a drink at one order a drink, but she doesn't actually drink it. The only one that you see drinking is the mom.
Mom's a drunk.
Well, no, the mom flies over from England to bring the one twin back,
okay,
and try to do the hookup on the plane. She gets drunk. You don't see her drinking on the plane. You see the aftermath that she's drunk after having been on the plane because you
don't see her drink.
Hold on.
Okay.
She's nervous about going back to see the father of her kids.
So she gets smashed because she's nervous. Right.
She does get into the bar at the hotel and order a drink, but I do not remember positively if you watch her actually drink the drink or just order it while she's completely drunk.
Okay. And disclaimer, I understand.
There's extra hijinks that ensue because she is drunk. They play it off as she's the only one drunk, and the only time she drinks, she gets drunk.
Okay.
And when she does start to reconnect with the father,
mm-hmm,
he shows her a bottle of wine that was part of their when they originally were together, and I think they had gotten married, then they got divorced,
right,
after the kids,
right,
from when they originally got married on a cruise boat or something that they had gotten married on, or they had done something together. There was wine that was served on that boat.
Right.
He bought every single bottle of it because, of course, he owns a winery, so he's big into wine. Mm-hmm. He bought every bottle that was left of it as a remembrance, you know, oh, romantic. I love this moment. This moment means something. So I'm going to buy every bottle of wine that was left from this specific bottle that was served on this cruise ship.
Right.
Which is, it's a nice romantic gesture, and it makes sense for a guy who owns a winery and has a huge cellar with a gigantic collection of wine.
Right.
But they don't drink it.
Okay.
They have it. They show it, and it's a big thing because, again, it makes sense. Winery, wine bottles, I love you.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's the set. But
they don't drink it.
Okay. The part that I don't understand is just the fact that they refuse to drink. There's one situation where mom gets drunk, right? And hijinks ensue.
And
is it anything particularly negative? Does she get arrested? Does she?
She doesn't get arrested.
Make a fool of herself.
Yes, she does. She does make a fool of herself.
Well, that's one.
Yeah.
That's point towards the point towards Matt on that one.
Exactly. And this is where the shift is. The alcohol wasn't a present issue in the first one. It just was there.
Okay.
In the second one, he owns a freaking winery. It's a major plot issue, and yet people aren't drinking. And the one time somebody does drink, it's pointed out. It's made an issue of. It's not just in the background of what life is.
So this guy's making money off stuff that obviously throughout the entire movie is seen as a negative thing.
Well, not necessarily a negative thing, but something that you should be cautious about because you never know what'll happen if you do it. Whereas before, in the original one, it's just a part of natural life. And see, that's the thing is, in the original one, it wasn't a big deal. Nobody talked about it. It wasn't a thing. But in the second one, after this cultural shift, after Matt has made their campaign and the laws have been put in place to change the drinking age and all of this stuff has changed over, suddenly, the alcohol is more of a focus than it was.
Interesting.
It's actually paid attention to. It's actually something important in it.
Huh.
And it just shows the change in perception of how alcohol was viewed back then to, you know, back in 61 and the changeover all the way into 98. Here's another example for you. Here's another thing to think about. TV families, right?
Okay.
You look back to 70s.
Okay.
You got All in the Family, the show, Archie Bunker.
Oh, yeah.
He was drinking, right?
He was drinking all the damn time.
Yeah.
Ultimate image of Archie Bunker is sitting in his chair, drinking a beer. Or no, he was a whiskey guy, wasn't he?
I don't remember exactly what he was drinking.
But I knew he was drinking.
Meathead was drinking.
Yeah, he was drinking too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And of course we have you mentioned Dean Martin earlier. You have the Rat Pack drinking everything that they possibly can, 60s and 70s.
And at that time Dean Martin was drunk constantly.
Yeah.
They had the roasts and stuff that they were doing. He was always smashed and they would make fun of it.
Yeah.
But he was this Dean Martin, the lovable drunk, like that was his thing, and it became part of his persona. And who knows, maybe he didn't actually drink that much. He just knew how to act drunk all the time.
But
he was like pretty constantly sauced, and that was like they made it part of his character.
Yeah.
But if you notice, Dean was a lovable drunk.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, really weird as far as a character perception. In general, it's something that's really tough to even wrap your mind around today.
Well, but it's tough to wrap our mind around today because we've been taught that you can't have that lovable drunk. Because the alcohol is going to do something to you. Let's look, though. You'd say Archie Bunker was probably the dad of the 70s. Yeah? He was one of the bigger dads of the 70s as far as TV shows go.
I would say he was a large cultural icon, but the reason why he was is because he was proven to be the village idiot.
Yeah, there's that. Well, and you go into the 80s, right?
Right.
Think of the TV dads of the 80s. Which ones come out that you're thinking of immediately? I mean, many people, despite the more recent unveiling of things that happened in his life and the recent convictions of things that happened in his life.
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby was kind of a dad of the 80s. Until
Bill Cosby was one. I can't think of the name of the guy. The dad from Family Ties. He was one.
Yeah. Seaver, right?
What was it?
Was it Seaver, last name?
Seaver.
Maybe. But, okay.
Wasn't it Punky Brewster was adopted dad?
I think there was a lot.
That show's fuzzy to me.
Wow, we're going to have to go over a show of the 80s and the various adopted children.
Yeah, that was
a big deal in the 80s, wasn't it? A lot of adopted kids living with, you got Webster, you have Punky Brewster, you have, gosh, there's like three or four of them. That'll be another show. People will be the phenomenon of adopted, kids in 80s TV shows.
Ooh, Homer Simpson.
Oh, you got Homer Simpson.
Yes.
Now that's an interesting one. Homer Simpson he was late 80s, but he can be considered definitely a father of the 80s.
Yeah. Technically speaking, right. It was like 88.
Something like that.
I think it was 88.
How about another one from the late 80s? Another one that's similar to Homer Simpson.
Al Bundy.
There's another one.
Those two
are interesting. Those two are interesting because they are about the only ones in the 80s that were drinking regularly, that were seen to drink regularly.
You know what's really funny about Homer Simpson specifically?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's the fact that cartoons in general were meant for kids, and the only regular drunk dad of the 80s in that time frame was a flipping cartoon.
It was. Well, I mean, Simpsons was never necessarily meant for kids.
No, it wasn't, but it was one of the, well, it was a very pioneering show because it was an adult-oriented cartoon that came out in primetime.
Yeah.
Especially. But yes. But what's really funny is that's a cornerstone of his character.
Yeah,
but he drinks. But, he visits a bar. He goes. That's thing what about he does.
He's an idiot.
He is. He's a complete.
And it shows how much of an idiot he is, even more so when he's drunk.
Oh yeah.
He's just completely stupid. Al Bundy, complete idiot. I believe somebody
super
made
super shady.
Yes.
Like super shady, just really really underhanded, sneaky kind of a guy.
Yes.
A drunk that hates his family.
Yes.
Like that's just kind of, I mean, he didn't necessarily quote unquote hate his family, but he did hate their mannerisms and he hated their habits and just the general type of people they were. I mean, that's Married with Children is if you were to take Archie Bunker and make him an entire family.
Well, there's that. Yeah. That's actually a really good analogy of the show.
That's, I mean, there is no moral compass to that show, but that's why it's funny.
Well, and that's the point is,
or at least to the stars of the show, to the family.
And that's kind of the point is, when you look at the 80s and you look at the TV dads that did drink.
Yeah.
You look at the main characters in TV shows that drank.
Yeah.
They're not the moral people in the show.
Yeah. They're painted as.
And this is again where the perception changes. They suddenly become people with alcohol problems, people with other problems. The alcohol helps stem the problem further.
Yeah.
And that's where
I could see that.
That's where all this shift happened. Now, the interesting part about that is, and we mentioned in the first half of the thing you were talking about, the drunk history.
Mm-hmm.
Drunk history was mentioned. And drunk history, if for those of you who don't know, is basically a TV show where various celebrities get drunk and then have to recount history things.
Yeah,
historical stuff that happens.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because drinking now has become more socially acceptable. Over the last, I would say, 15 years or so,
mm-hmm.
we've seen a new shift in this idea of safe, responsible drinking
mm-hmm.
that's now become a more socially acceptable thing to do. Whereas when we were growing up, The thing that they were trying to teach us about it was how bad drinking was, how horrible it was, how much trouble you could get in for it, how you needed to not do it. Same with, and we'll deal with these specific other ones later, same with smoking cigarettes was bad, same with doing drugs was bad. There were so many programs that were involved in our schools back in the day to try to stop us from doing all of these things. But alcohol has seen a resurgence in its acceptance.
That's true. And you know what? You're kind of making the wheels turn a little bit. There is a bit of a complete shift in the perception of smoking.
There has
whereas
been.
It's not like case in point. I watch Gotham the pre Batman live mm-hmm. action series. It's in its final season. In many of the episodes of Gotham, they're in the main office, Jim Gordon's office or whatever. And there's actually a bar. There's a small wet bar inside his office.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, what does he do? He gets up, he grabs some whiskey out of a decanter, pours him and whoever the hell's in his office with him a drink. They sit there and have a drink on camera. They just sit there and, discuss business or whatever.
When would you have seen that in the 80s?
I've never seen anybody take a smoke break in that series.
Nope. They don't take a smoke break, but they'll take and have some drinking. Here's one to really throw at you. Here's one that shows how this second shift has happened, this new shift of acceptable drinking.
Mm-hmm.
The TV show Friends.
Okay.
It's about a group of friends living in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
That interact with each other, have various relationships with each other, all kinds of wackiness ensues.
They hang out at a coffee bar.
You're
whoa,
you're going to the point here. I was going to ask
this was not scripted, by the way.
I was going to ask you, where do they hang out?
At a coffee bar.
Great. How about the TV show How I Met Your Mother? Wait for it. How I Met Your Mother. What are they? They're a bunch of friends that live in New York. Where do they hang out?
They hang out at a bar.
And what are we talking? 10,
well, it's
15
like a
years
restaurant
difference?
With a bar, right?
It's a bar.
It is a bar. It is a bar.
We're talking about 10, 15 years of difference of when these shows started.
Yeah. They're having pints and stuff,
Exactly.
Yeah.
One started, and you in both of them, you have that one character that sleeps around with everybody. In Friends, it's Joey. In For How I Met Your Mother, it's Barney. Right?
Right.
Yeah, that sleeps with everybody. Everybody yes. they possibly can.
Yes.
Joey's not drinking. Barney is all the time. Why? Because there's been this shift in, again, this 80s and 90s thing was how bad drinking was. Now the shift has become some drinking is acceptable if you do it responsibly, if you do right. it appropriately. These two shows were huge shows and both basically the same premise, a group of friends in New York. The same basic premise.
Yeah.
One hangs out at a coffee shop, one hangs out at a bar. The difference, when they came out. One came out at the height of this, we don't want to deal with alcohol and people drinking. The other one came out with, responsible drinking is okay. That's how you can see the shift from drinking bad to
right.
drinking not so bad if you do it the right way.
Interesting.
And that's where we've seen a more cultural shift of now it's okay to drink as long as we're responsible and do it in an
right.
appropriate
you don't
way.
See, yeah, you don't see... In case in point in the Gotham series, I don't remember any point where Gordon is just smashed trying to pull something off.
No,
or something.
Just he'll just sit and have a drink.
I think he's drugged at one point, but that's against his will or against his knowledge.
If you do see somebody drunk, they make a point to point out how not being drunk is okay, but having a drink now and then is perfectly fine.
Yeah. Yeah, they
and
do
that's,
that.
And that's where we've seen... We've seen another shift in that in the culture of it. That's just, I mean, it's nice for those of us who do enjoy the occasional alcoholic drink.
So getting back to what we're talking about, would you say that it was Mad that was kind of part of this cultural shift?
I think Mad was
it propaganda? Was it campaigning? Was it what was it?
I think Mad with their work and their work to get that law passed in 1984.
Right.
I think and the other work that they put in with like the school things that you discussed.
Yeah.
The school demonstrations. I think they are the ones that started created the kind of anti-alcohol mind frame.
Right.
But I think what we're seeing now is people from our generation, our Xennial generation, and then some of the older millennials that have reached the age of majority, have reached the age of 21 and have started discovering alcohol and had also been bombarded by all of these school programs trying to, stop us from drinking, stop us from doing all these things.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is more of like a backlash response. From that
to okay, so you're talking about like where what we're talking about is it just as a society we're trying to find a happy medium in media?
I think that what's happening is it was a shift again, like I said before, of making us afraid of alcohol, of making it so that alcohol was a bad thing, demonizing it almost. And now we're seeing.
So you're talking about it's kind of similar to the fear campaign that was put with drugs.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
And now that. The first generation to get that, the generation that got that heavy, our generation, and then again the millennials,
right?
Because this didn't start hitting heavy in schools until the mid 80s,
right? Right.
We're now as adults realizing that this demon that we were told, this alcohol demon, isn't really a demon at all, and we're shifting now to make it more of a socially acceptable thing. There's also the fact that a lot of alcohol companies have kind of bid on it as well. And you see a lot of alcohol ads will be talking about drinking responsibly.
Drink responsibly, To consider alcohol and its uses and its consumption essentially as a party drink for the most part, a social drink.
Yeah.
Considering it and in responsible consumption of alcohol in general is important. However, I know a lot of people that would essentially argue against the point that it is not necessarily good. Like there's no real uses for alcohol aside from cleaning products
and getting drunk.
Those are the only two uses. As a matter of fact, consistent usage of alcohol, it harms the body.
Well,
it does. Consistent overusage, especially of alcohol, will harm the body.
Overusage, yes. There are obviously, it's funny how various scientific reports will come out at different points that, drinking this specific type of alcohol, so much of it a day is actually helpful for your heart or helpful for your this or for your that. I mean,
I am not sure that those things aren't paid for, dude.
Well,
like,
I see
a lot of this back and forth and people, you know, I hear things like vaping gives you popcorn lung and people that overeat and drink will live longer than people that exercise all the time. And it just doesn't logically sound right to me.
And I
now, one way or another, like any type of quote unquote, this one survey by Lord knows who that my friend shared on Facebook as an article as proof for them to live whatever lifestyle they choose, which I made no judgment about in the first place. I don't care.
Yeah.
That perception of being able to share that in a relatively, for the most part, unfounded assumption or conclusion.
Yeah.
As much as it doesn't change my perception of who that person is, you can constantly see that those are being put out there so that people find excuses for living the lifestyle that they want to, regardless.
I don't disagree with you on all those points.
That aside, there are not enough legitimate tests with unbiased results that are put out there.
But what we're dealing with here is not about test results.
This is around the stigma and the perception of alcohol and alcoholism. Perception.
Yeah.
As far as stating that the substance itself is evil or not, that is not.
Well, no, but
I don't think that that's necessarily.
You seem to have a real issue with the word evil being attached to things, and that's good. We will definitely have to work on discussion of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm really talking about here is perception. Okay. And that's the perception that was of alcohol that was pushed, at least, perception is all how you interpret and all how you feel. The perception that was pushed during the years of the 80s by various groups, MAD being one of them,
right,
was that it was something that was an evil of society. And again, this is perception. This is not truly something evil, but this was a fear-mongering in a very similar vein of what McCarthy did. During the Red Scare, it was all about trying to drum up fear about something because of the start of one person's tragic thing. And I don't want to make light of the tragedy of what happened. We don't make light of any tragedy like that. That was a tragic thing for a drunk driver to have killed that young girl.
Yeah.
But that tragedy spawned this eventual campaign. And she, by the way, did eventually break away from Matt.
Because they kind of went out of control.
Of the direction that they ended up taking it. She did break away from MAD.
So MAD was literally, it's an acronym for Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah.
But not Mothers Against Alcohol.
But it became something more than that. And that's the thing, is the perception became that alcohol caused all of these horrible things. When in fact, now, again, we're seeing such a shift in it that appropriate consumption, no, it doesn't cause these horrible things. Instead, what they're focusing more on is the idea of, I'm sure you've heard this a lot recently, alcoholism being a disease, classifying it more as a disease that somebody has.
Yes.
That in many ways really puts I don't want to use the word blame because that's inappropriate, but it takes the responsibility off of the alcohol, because alcohol is just an inert thing. It takes the responsibility off the alcohol and puts the responsibility on the people that consume it. And I think that is where you're seeing more of a resurgence of alcohol culture. People are saying, no, it's not alcohol that's bad. It's people that make decisions that aren't necessarily the best for whatever reason. Sometimes it's because they can't make any better decisions. Sometimes it's because they're just stupid and make bad decisions. I think it's a good shift because it stops demonizing an item and it starts taking care of decisions and choices that people make and trying to get people to make better choices.
Okay.
Make more appropriate choices in what they're doing. Still be able to enjoy certain things, mm-hmm. but make an appropriate choice to enjoy them as opposed to making a poor choice and abusing them.
Yeah.
This change that happened in our childhood as a result of what happened that day, mm-hmm. that September 5th, started the cultural revolution of let's look at alcohol. It was a weird way to go about it, but let's look at this item and see how it affects us. And maybe what we can do better. Hopefully it did help with drunk driving, but more importantly, I think it's given a new life and idea to appropriate use of alcohol in the world today.
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. I think it's something that the importance of responsible consumption is essentially immeasurable.
Well, right? and funny enough, that runs to just about everything that we consume in our lives.
Yeah.
Everything should be consumed in a responsible fashion.
I agree.
You drink too much alcohol, you damage your body. You eat too many fatty or sugary things, you damage your body.
Yeah.
Smoke too much, you damage your body. I mean, all of these things do at some point damage your body when taken in excess.
Yeah.
There are some things that you only have to do one time and it damages your body. But others, if you're responsible with them, there are many things that are still good for you and still be able to be enjoyable.
True.
Anyway, well, I guess we'll end on that note. That's a weird note to end on, but
I don't know, a little, I guess somber. I don't know. This sounds like this episode has a moral.
Does it? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, it's definitely, I hope there's enough humor in there that people find it amusing, but also enough knowledge for people to make right choices in life. There's our moral. Make right choices in life.
Yeah.
Don't drive drunk.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't be a stupid ass.
Yeah. Cause that's bad. The rest of it, do enjoy alcohol, but do it responsibly. And put your damn scotch in a decanter. Seriously. Be madman badass. Okay.
Deal.
Okay.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Make sure that if you're listening to this on YouTube, you hit the subscribe button. And then when the little bell pops up, you hit the little bell button make sure that you get notices when we put these new videos out. If you are not listening on YouTube, you want to find out where to find us and find more information. We are on Facebook and we're on Twitter at the handle @Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. Check us out at thezenialchronicles.com. I'm not spelling that. That's huge. Or you can go to zenchron.com, same as the handle, X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N.com, and actually get some of the podcasts there as well.
And I have a promise for you all. In the next couple of days after this comes out, I will have pictures up of my USS flag that we discussed last episode.
Oh, yeah.
The aircraft carrier and me asleep with my my X-Wing fighter. I will get those posted. Not sure if I'm going to meme them, but I'm definitely going to post them.
I wonder if I can find any of those toys that I had when I was a kid.
Some turtle toy pictures.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
All right, man.
We're out. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.